we now come to the backbench motion on the Bishop of Truro's review on persecutions of Christians overseas. We are already having to start this debate later than any of us would have liked. The chair succeeding me will do his best to protect the time for it, and it would be appreciated if colleagues who wish to conduct conversations on other matters would leave the chamber quickly and quietly to do so, so that those who wish to get on with this important debate can do so unimpeded and with appropriate attention. To move the motion, I call Chris Philp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I beg to move that this House deplores the persecution of Christians overseas, supports freedom of religious belief in all countries, welcomes the Bishop of Truro's report, and calls on the UK government to do more to prevail on governments of countries where persecution of Christians is tolerated or encouraged to end that persecution and protect the right to freedom of religious belief. Mr. Deputy Speaker, I would like to especially thank the Honourable Member for Strangford and also the Honourable Members for Congleton and Glasgow East for their work in securing this debate. I congratulate the Bishop of Truro on his report published 10 days ago. I would also like to thank Open Doors and Aid to the Church in Need for their tireless work on this issue. Around the world, there are horrifying stories of Christians being attacked and often killed, of churches being destroyed, and Christians being persecuted and prevented from worshipping. This is happening on an industrial scale in multiple countries. Yeah. Often, the governments in those countries turn a blind eye or are even responsible for the persecution themselves. Christianity is the most persecuted religion in the world. The International Society for Human Rights say 80% of religious persecution in the world is against Christians. Open Doors estimates that 245 million Christians, one in nine around the world, face persecution. Here are some examples. In April 2017, a young Nigerian woman, Dorcas Darker, was murdered, along with 12 others, simply for attending an Easter Mass. Local priest Father Alexander Yacock said that Nigerian military units stood by and did nothing while these murders took place. In November 2017, in Mina, Egypt, a mob surrounded a Coptic church, threatening worshippers inside, many of whom were also physically attacked. Local Coptic leader Anbar Makarios said that the Egyptian authorities have done nothing to bring those responsible to justice. I will.
And I think he's describing very, very accurately what is happening to Christians across the world. Given the involvement of the authorities in the two countries that he has given as examples, and many other countries, countries which we give considerable aid to in form of money, in form of other expert advice, etc., does he believe that the government could put more pressure by withdrawing aid, or at least threatening to withdraw aid from them?
Yes, I completely agree with the point the Honourable Member has made. It's a point I'm going to come on to expand on in a short while. We do give lots of money to these countries where the governments themselves are turning a blind eye, or even themselves actively encouraging or carrying out persecution. We should be attaching conditions to the aid we did, and in extreme cases, even withdrawing it entirely. I agree completely with the point the Honourable Member makes. In Pakistan, Christian woman Asia Bibi was sentenced to death for blasphemy in 2010. Asia is now in safety in Canada, but the very cell in which she was incarcerated now holds Shagufta Kausara, a Christian 45-year-old mother of four who was sentenced to death for blasphemy in 2014. The very cell which Asia Bibi was held in now contains another Christian woman, also under sentence of death. I will, yes.
I welcome what he has to say. He mentioned the issue of Asia Bibi and Pakistan. Many in this House have said from the very beginning on that case that Asher was being persecuted for her faith, and that countries around the world, in line with their religious belief and commitment, should have offered her asylum. The United Kingdom should have done that. We didn't. Would the honourable member agree with me? After this report, will our foreign policy now change? So rather than hiving off our responsibility on religious freedom to Canada and other countries, we should offer asylum to those who have been persecuted, like Asher Bibi.
I think that is a question that requires very serious consideration. And of course, there are many persecuted Christians from countries like Iraq and Syria who might wish to seek asylum as well. Last year, again in Pakistan, Sunil Saleem was beaten to death by a group of doctors, in the services hospital in Lahore when he protested about the anti-Christian abuse his heavily pregnant sister had suffered at that hospital. The US State Department says that the Pakistani government itself has engaged in or tolerated systematic, ongoing and egregious violations of religious freedom, I'm quoting. And yet, just a few weeks ago, Pakistan's foreign minister, speaking in Brussels, dismissed concerns as being whipped up by Western interests. His attitude is not acceptable, especially bearing in mind that the UK government sends £463 million a year in aid to Pakistan, the single biggest recipient of UK overseas aid, without attaching conditions about ending overseas, ending persecution of religious minorities. The litany of persecution goes on, Mr. Deputy Speaker. In May 2017, two churches in Sudan were destroyed on the orders of the government. In June 2017, 33 Christian women in Eritrea were imprisoned by the Eritrean government simply for taking part in prayer. And in India, 24,000 Christians were physically assaulted last year. Prime Minister Modi dismissed this as being imaginary fears. He is wrong, and we should say so. Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen, for giving way. He's indeed giving an excellent speech on what is such a very important issue. Would he also agree with me that we have to be very careful that individuals in this country too have freedom of religious belief, particularly given the level of abuse and intolerance following from the votes last week on abortion, and also the cry that St Vincent de Paul Parish in East Kilbride, my own constituency, parishioners arrived this morning to find that Our Lady in the Grotto had been destroyed by mindless vandals, and that these issues are also troubling people across the United Kingdom.
The Honourable Lady is quite right. Of course, the first place that we should champion and protect religious freedom is here in the United Kingdom. That is, of course, our first duty as Members of Parliament, but let us not also forget the duty we owe to persecuted minorities around the world to stand up and protect them as well. Let me just make a little progress, if I may, because I know time is short. In Saudi Arabia, public places of Christian worship are banned. There are regular crackdowns and raids on private Christian ceremonies, and Christians in Saudi Arabia are regularly imprisoned. Saudi Arabian schools use textbooks which teach hatred against Christians and Jews, and the country's Grand Mufti recently said that Christianity is not a religion.
You can't have a church, though.
Christians are often a target for religious extremists. The example of the terrible attack in Sri Lanka in Easter this year saw 259 people murdered by Islamist extremists. And on Palm Sunday in Egypt in 2017, ISIS bombers murdered 45 Coptic Christians. In Pakistan the year before, again at Easter, the Taliban murdered 75 Christians at Easter. These are just a few of the terrible examples of the persecution and murder which Christians around the world are suffering from.
Would he give way?
I will.
Just very briefly, I'm grateful. I mean, he's making a powerful case, and the Bishop of Truro's report is a very strong one. But he would also recognise, and I'm sure my honourable friend would, that of course there are terrible cases of persecution against other religions elsewhere in the world, of whom the Muslim Rohingya in Burma is a worst recent example. Does he agree with me that there are cases about religions in general which the Foreign Office should also be considering in its policy?
Yes, of course the Foreign Office should take a strong position on the persecution of any religious minorities, and of course the persecution of the Rohingya Muslims in Burma is a particularly egregious example. So I'm certainly not saying we should ignore other examples of persecution. I am drawing the House's attention, though, to the fact that 80% of religious persecution around the world is committed against Christians, and we should be mindful of that. Indeed, yes.
Giving way, and I completely agree with the situation he's outlining, which is deeply horrific. And I too spoke on an Open Doors panel at the Labour Party conference last year. We mentioned Saudi Arabia, we mentioned Pakistan. Would you accept that there's a fundamental problem here in that we have a series of alliances, a series of relationships with those countries, but often turn a blind eye to the fact that they are not only persecuting Christians but other religious minorities? And would you also agree that actually there's a problem here, that we often don't know how many Christians are even in these countries because people are fearful of stating what their religion is in the first place?
I agree with both points the Honourable Member makes, both in terms of not knowing how many people are affected and the fact that we often have quite close relationships with some of these countries. And I think for Western governments to fail to act makes us in many ways complicit in some of these outrages. As the noble Lord Alton has argued many times, failing to stand up to protect minorities simply serves to encourage the persecutors. Lord Alton has often referred to the fact that the world's indifference made possible the slaughter of 1.5 million Christian Armenians between 1915 and 1917. He makes the point that if we ignore some of these atrocities, it encourages even worse atrocities to get perpetrated in the future. Lord Alton has made that point very powerfully on many occasions. Against this backdrop, the Bishop of Truro's work has never been more important. I fully support his report. The bishop finds that the persecution and murder of Christians around the world is the most, and I quote, the most shocking abuse of human rights in the modern era. In particular, I support the bishop's call for a UN resolution that those countries responsible for tolerating or encouraging the persecution of Christians and religious minorities instead protect them.
Could the Honourable Gentleman give way?
One last time, yes.
Thank you very much for giving way, and I thank the Deputy Speaker for allowing me to intervene. I'm afraid I have seen instances of Christians killing Christians. And obviously I'm referring to Bosnia, where I witnessed that. So it is not just other religions having a go at Christians, it's actually Christians on Christians, almost blue on blue, as you would say.
Yes, well, I'm aware of the honourable friend's military service in Bosnia and the fact he was present, or certainly in the country, when the Srebrenica massacre of 1995 took place. So we should be mindful of those sort of atrocities as well as the other ones we're talking about today. Returning to the Bishop of Truro's report, I also support his call for the government and the UN to impose sanctions on those countries who fail to protect religious minorities. And I further support the Bishop's call to train British diplomatic staff on this issue and make it a priority of British foreign policy to put pressure on governments who are turning a blind eye to this issue. But there is even more we can do, as one of my honourable friends suggested in an intervention earlier. Many of the countries where the persecution of Christians is tolerated or is even state-sponsored receive direct foreign aid from the United Kingdom. Many of these countries will wish to secure trade and investment deals with us. Many of these countries also buy arms from the UK, which requires a UK government export licence. I would like to see the UK government do more to link overseas aid, trade and arms exports to real progress on the persecution of religious minorities. Why should we send British taxpayers' money to a government, or indeed sell them arms, when they allow or encourage the persecution of religious minorities? Ideally, we should make sure these steps are taken on a multinational basis together with our European Union and United Nations partners. But if that cannot be secured, the UK should be prepared to act alone. The UK government cannot and must not simply mouth platitudes, but must take real action. By approving this motion today, this House will make clear its view. The government should then act.
The question is, as on the order paper, I'm going to call Susan Allen-Jones, but can I just say to everybody, it's a 4-minute limit. Can we be very strict to each other, or otherwise somebody's going to drop off, and I don't want that to happen. Susan Allen-Jones.
Thank you very much, Mr Deputy Speaker, and it's a great pleasure to follow the Honourable Member for Clwyd South, for Croydon South, who made a very thoughtful speech. And mention was made also of the honourable members for Strangford, Congleton and Glasgow East. And I was going to just thank them for requesting this debate, but I'd also like to thank them for the tireless campaigning work that they have all done in this area. But above all, it is the NGOs I think we would all wish to thank, Open Doors and the others, who have kept these issues going and in our consciousness for years. And in many cases, thanks to our constituents who have kept members across this House informed. And I'd like to, as I do this, to thank the Penachai Neighbourhood Church of the Nazarene and some of their members who have kept me informed of meetings that have been happening. Now, freedom of belief. I begin by saying it is a basic human right. It's not a Western construct. It is a basic fact of being human. The UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 18, makes it very clear. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience and religion. This right includes freedom to change their religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or community, in community with others, and in public or private, to manifest their religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship and observance. And I congratulate the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and the work that the Bishop has done in looking at the specific issue of persecution against Christians simply because of the scale of it. I think Open Doors say that now extreme persecution within 5 years has been up from one country to 11. That is extreme persecution. And there's been a rise of hate speech in state media and by religious leaders. And we've also seen in this House and in the European Parliament and the US House of Representatives where we declared ISIS atrocities against Christians and other religious minorities, for example against the Yazidis and Shia Muslims, met the tests of genocide. I would like to see that recognised by the UK government. But I think, however inconvenient it may be sometimes for politicians from Western democracies, we must recognise that part of that universal declaration includes the right to convert, to change religion or belief, including the right of no belief, which is a fundamental part of religious freedom. It is not about Western values, it is about universal human values. And any extreme form of nationalism that does not allow for conversion goes against that fundamental tenet. I think there is a real role, too, mentioned was made rightly at the United Nations for the Commonwealth. For the blasphemy laws in Pakistan are a total obscenity. It is not somehow loosely based on the codification of laws in the 1860s. What we have seen since the 1980s is that crimes under this have increased and they have prejudiced against certain religions, certain types of the Islam religion, and against Christians, and it is a disgrace. But I would also say that there are issues of general concern that I would like us to reflect on. Firstly, the death penalty. We have seen an increased use of the death penalty, and as the Pakistan Centre for Social Justice says, introduction of that has increased of people accused of blasphemy. In 29 states now in the US, they still use the death penalty, including in some states by the firing squad. It is simply unacceptable for those of us in the West who wish to advocate on this issue for the US to have that death penalty, and I would urge the FCO to challenge it. And I would urge everyone in the US who cares about the persecution of Christians to question their use of the death penalty in that country. And very, very lastly, I think we all take a responsibility. I don't want to be partisan, but when people describe Muslims women wearing burqas looking like letterboxes, that is irresponsible wherever it comes from. We have got to protect these freedoms.
Yes, Mr. Deputy Speaker. As the Bishop of Truro, local MP, I'm very pleased to be able to speak in this debate in support of his excellent report. Mr. Deputy Speaker, it's become a custom in this House to give voice to the voiceless. This enables us to ground our debate in the real life experience of our constituents and draw upon their expertise. So I want to use the very short time I have available today to give voice to the Bishop himself, as he can't speak in this debate. I had planned on reading out his personal introduction to the report, but time will only allow me a few extracts on the six reasons for his review. First, to understand why the review is justified, we have to appreciate that today the Christian faith is primarily a phenomenon of the global South, and it's therefore primarily a phenomenon of the global poor. Western voices that are quick to speak up for the world's poor cannot afford to be blind to this issue. Secondly, this particular focus is justified because Christian persecution, like no other, is a global phenomenon. Thus, Christian persecution is not limited to one context or challenge. Thirdly, Christian persecution is a human rights issue and should be seen as such. Freedom of religion or belief is perhaps the most fundamental human right because so many others depend upon it. If freedom of religion or belief is removed, so many other rights are put in jeopardy too. Fourthly, this is not about special pleading for Christians, but making up a significant deficit. So in that sense, it's an equality issue. If one minority is on the receiving end of 80% of religiously motivated discrimination, it is simply not just that they should receive so little attention. Fifthly, however, this is also about being sensitive to discrimination and persecution of all minorities. Because the Christian faith is perhaps the only truly global faith, it has become a bellwether for repression more generally. So renewing a focus on Christian persecution is actually a way of expressing our concern for all minorities who find themselves under pressure. And finally, to look at this both historically and theologically, the Christian faith has always been subversive. Jesus the Lord is the earliest Christian creed. Those are not empty words. Rather, they explain why from the earliest days the Christian faith attracted persecution. To say that Jesus is Lord was to say that Caesar was not Lord, as he claimed to be. So from its earliest days, the Christian faith presented a radical challenge to any power that made absolute claims for itself. Christian faith should not make absolutist political claims for itself, but it always challenged those that do. Indeed, the Christian faith's inherent challenge absolutist claim explains why it has been such a key foundation stone of Western democratic government, and explains too why we should continue to support it vigorously wherever it is under threat. Nonetheless, the focus of the review's recommendations is clearly on guaranteeing freedom of religion or belief for all, irrespective of faith, tradition or belief system, taking full account of the scale, scope and severity of its abuse in its various contexts. We must seek freedom of religion and belief for all without fear or favour. This is something, Mr Deputy Speaker, and the whole House, I think we can agree upon, and I very much support the motion tonight.
Ruth Jones.
Thank you, Mr Deputy Speaker, and it is a pleasure to be able to speak in this debate on this important issue. And I would like to start, as many have done before me, by paying tribute to the Bishop of Truro for his important and wide-ranging report that not only highlights so many issues that we need to think about, but points to how we build a better and more tolerant world for all of us. Now, although I don't subscribe to the Foreign Secretary's newfound views on Britain leaving the European Union with no deal, I do thank him for establishing the independent review into the extent and nature of the global persecution of Christians and to assess the quality of the response from the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and the British Government more generally. Since April this year, I've had the good fortune and immense honour of representing my home and my community in Newport West, one of the most diverse and multicultural parts of Wales. We have people from all communities and all cultures able to practice and embrace their faith. And I know that colleagues across this House believe in the importance of all communities and all people having the chance to do that right across the world too. I thank the Bishop for making very clear at the outset that this review is not about pitting one faith against another or legitimising the hatred and loathing of Islam or Judaism, but this is about ensuring that all our faiths are respected and all those who practice are free to do so safely and peacefully.
One lady in giving way, and I completely agree with her when she says this is about ensuring people can practice their faith, whatever it may be. And as somebody who comes from a Muslim faith, whose father, grandfather, uncles were all imams, Islam in itself says La Ikraha fi Din. People should be able to practice their faith, whatever it is. There is no compulsion. So therefore, this report, you know, when it sets out that religious freedom, not only a civil right, but in people's own faith and scriptures, is pretty much as a fundamental core: respect each other's faith.
And I agree completely with the comments of the Honourable Member opposite. The persecution of Christians across the world is an issue that is attracting ever more focus and attention. and this point is exemplified by the fact that the review was meant to conclude by Easter 2019, but as the scale of the task became clear, deadlines were pushed back to ensure there was enough time for the fullest of reports to be published. Mr. Deputy Speaker, as I've already indicated, the persecution of Christians is an increasing concern to me and many of my constituents, and I thank all those, Christian and non-Christian, who have written to me asking me to speak up for them in this debate this afternoon. We must, as the Bishop notes, recognise this isn't a Western problem, and that many of the poorest in our world are Christians, and they need our solidarity and support. It's easy to brush this off, but there are people living in fear, people living with often devastating consequences, people who need the British government to stand up for them. This needs to stand with them, and this is why it's so important that the British government gets to grips with this. And of course it isn't just us, we need to work with our partners in the Commonwealth of Nations, we need to raise these issues in the Security Council of the United Nations, and whatever happens with our relationship with them in the European Union, we need to work with Europe too. I know that the Foreign Secretary may not be in his place next week, who knows, he could be in number 10, but whoever steps into the role next week, I hope he or she will maintain an interest in and focus on these issues. They are really important. I welcome the 22 recommendations from the Bishop's report, and particularly the focus on working together with our international and regional partners and allies. And we must ensure that civil society plays its role in shaping views and protecting minorities. We've seen what happened with the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar, the Christians in the Middle East and in other places. The British government can become and should become a leader on defending freedom of expression and of faith too. Like my constituents back home in Newport West, I was struck by the quote in the report from William Wilberforce. He said in this very chamber in 1791, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say you did not know." Our task in this chamber and in our communities is to ensure that we don't look the other way and that we don't walk by on the other side either. Thank you.
Yeah.
Andrew Griffiths.
I don't know whether I should start by declaring in the Register of Members' interests that I'm a Christian who's newly found faith, Mr. Deputy Speaker, but I think it is really exciting to see so many people, so many members of all parties in this House wanting to take part in this debate. It's a shame that we are limited to such a small amount of time today, because there are literally so many MPs who want to get in and make their points. But first of all, I want to pay tribute to the Foreign Secretary for his work in bringing about this important report. You know, for there was that old adage that, you know, in 10 Downing Street we don't do God. But that was a previous administration. And I think Christians are in this country have often thought that there was a sniffiness about Christianity, that all too often, you know, since I've found faith, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I've heard the words, "Oh, do-gooders." A Church of England vicar sent me an email about Jesus freaks. We seem to do down Christianity in this country somewhat, and I think it is important that the Foreign Secretary has put this front and centre in relation to the work of the Foreign Office. We are a multicultural and multi-faith society, and we should embrace that and we should champion that. But when you see that 80% of all religious persecutions around the world are Christians that are being persecuted, it is important that we as a nation stand up and say that we will not accept this, that we are going to come to the aid of those Christians around the world. And just in the same way that we deplore and we speak out when the Rohingya are being persecuted in Myanmar, the Yazidis in Iraq, the Uyghur Muslims in China, so we must, with all of our might and all of our voice, speak out in defence of Christians around the world. It touched me recently, the church that I attend in Uttoxeter, Renew Church, we had Open Doors come and present to us one Sunday. And it is scary, the scale at which Christian persecution around the world is taking place, and also the speed at which it is increasing.
I think I'm most grateful to him, and thank him very much for what he is saying. Would he agree with me that we should approach all this in a real spirit of humility, because we ourselves in this country have seen religious persecution over the centuries, but we know what it is to put that behind us and the advantages it brings to our society.
when we don't do that anymore. I myself come from a Huguenot background. We fled to this country because of religious persecution elsewhere. British people have had to flee to the Low Countries, to Netherlands, because of persecution here. We need to approach this in a spirit of humility as well as upholding of the name of Jesus Christ.
I absolutely agree with what my honourable friend says, and he's a true example of somebody who is living a Christian life, and he is absolutely right when he says that the UK was the first country to establish human rights such as freedom of religion. It was us that established this and spread it around the world to America and Australia and New Zealand. It was 1547 that the freedom to read the Bible in public was first established in the UK. 1559 when the freedom to interpret the Bible without government interference, Mr. Deputy Speaker. So there are centuries of examples of Britain leading the way in terms of the protection of religious freedoms of all kinds, but certainly in standing up for Christianity. I'll give way to him.
Great. At the outset, he mentioned that we have cross-party support for this motion. May I just gently add that not only is it cross-party, but it's also multi-faith amongst the members of Parliament here as well. What I would say to my honourable friend is that, would he agree with me that Britain has a significant role on the global stage? We are permanent members of the UN Security Council, head of the Commonwealth, and a major economic power. And we use our influence on the global stage for a whole variety of reasons and causes. And what we should do is to ensure that the protection of Christians is also put high up there to make sure that we use our influence for this purpose as well.
My honourable friend speaks with great common sense, as always. I'm very proud to represent a multicultural, multi-faith community. I have some 7,000 Muslims in my community, and they make a massive contribution to my society. It's a joy to be their member of Parliament. But he's absolutely right that we have this historic connection, this historic influence, for which we can do good. We can use that for the benefit of Christians, for the benefit of religious freedoms, and for the benefit of democracy around the world. I think in many respects, though, because of that history, we almost shy away from confrontation. I think because of that colonial past, we are often too afraid to be seen to be interfering in the business of other independent nations. But actually, as we heard from the proposer in his magnificent speech, and I commend him greatly in bringing this debate forward to today, we are seeing this on a global scale around the world, and it is only right that Britain should stand up and take its responsibility seriously. I pay tribute to the Bishop of Truro for the really brilliant and incisive work that he does, but I hope this is just the first step in this government really standing up and taking religious persecution and the persecution of Christians very, very seriously. I want it to run, a bit like a stick of Blackpool rock, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I want this to run through the middle of everything that we do in relation to our Foreign Office policy, be that aid, be that trade. We have the levers to be able to change behaviour and to save lives. When people are being victimised, persecuted, murdered, stabbed, bullied simply for reading the Bible and worshipping Jesus Christ, then we have to act. The Bible says, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that Christ said, "And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end will be saved." I absolutely believe that this is an important step forward in ensuring the safety of Christians around the world. Thank you.
May I begin by adding my congratulations to the Bishop of Truro on the publication of his excellent report, and add my thanks too to the honourable members for Glasgow East, Croydon South, Congleton and Strangford for securing this debate this afternoon. Not only that, but I'd like to put on record my appreciation for the work done by the APPG for the International Freedom of Religion or Belief and promoting the rights of peoples of faith or none to have the freedom to pursue a faith or not. And I'm sure the whole House will want to join me in sending our very best wishes to Catherine Thain, who until recently was the Operations Director for the APPG and who was married to George on Saturday. And I'd like to thank them all for being such a powerful voice for speaking up for persecuted Christians around the world. because sadly that voice is necessary more now than ever. And it seems no matter where one looks in the world right now, anti-Christian discrimination and persecution is on the rise. And I won't give way because of time. Okay, I will give way.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Would the Honourable Member agree with me that one of the important aspects of this report is that right across the United Kingdom, including within churches, there is still a significant amount of ignorance and lack of knowledge around the sheer scale of the persecution to Christians right across the world. And one of the things that we can do as Christians and as members of Parliament is to raise that awareness through the likes of this report and these types of debates.
Yeah. Normal reading is absolutely right. I think as Christians in this country we have become very comfortable in our freedom, our right to believe as we do, and we should always have it in the forefront of our mind that our brothers and sisters around the world are not in such a privileged position as we are. And it was a point made by His Holiness Pope Francis when he said recently, it might be hard for us to believe, but there are more martyrs in the world today than there were in the first centuries. They are persecuted because they speak the truth and proclaim Jesus Christ to this society. But increasingly, the response of this society to those speaking that truth is to imprison, torture, kidnap or murder them. Mr. Deputy Speaker, as we heard, every year the charity Open Doors publishes a watch list for countries which it believes persecution to be extreme, very high or high. One country was on that list 5 years ago, North Korea. Today there are no fewer than 11 countries considered to be in that extreme category. And we've all watched in horror the systematic attempts to eradicate all traces of Christianity from the ancient Middle East homeland that we all love. There are of course many charities and NGOs working hard and doing some great work, and if I may in the time I have pay tribute to the work done by Aid to the Church in Need, who each year fund over 5,000 projects in 140 countries, helping to support persecuted Christians, live out their faith and provide practical as well as spiritual support to millions of people. In January, I was privileged to join Aid to the Church in Need on a visit to Lebanon and to the Syrian border to see myself that practical and spiritual support in action. We met Christian families who fled Syria and Iraq and other places in the Middle East to seek refuge in Lebanon, and who, if not for the day-to-day support and the pastoral care provided by ACN, would be destitute. And on the Feast of the Epiphany in January, in the town of Zakleh in the Syrian border, we went to a food centre, the St John the Merciful Table, where every single day, Aid to the Church in Need, along with the Melkite Greek Catholic Archdiocese, provide 1,000 people with a hot meal. It was a small but wonderful example of how Christian organisations are helping those fleeing persecution. But with the number of people in need, it cannot be left to charities and NGOs. And that's why, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I commend the report of the Bishop of Truro. And I sincerely hope that the government takes heed of what it says and acts upon those recommendations. And I would urge the government in particular to heed his words around the UK being a global leader when it comes to championing freedom of religious or belief across the world. And I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with the member who spoke earlier on, who said that the UK government must be prepared to impose meaningful sanctions against perpetrators who abuse the religious beliefs of others. And finally, as the chair of the APPG on the Yazidi people, as we approach the fifth anniversary of the genocide, I would like to highlight the recommendation made by the Bishop that the Foreign Office take a lead role in pursuing the prosecution of the perpetrators of sex crimes against Yazidi and Christian women, not only as terrorists. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker.
Andrewson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Speaker. On the 31st of May 2014, the Times newspaper had an editorial headlined "Spectators at the Carnage." This was a charge against Western politicians, that's us here in this chamber and others throughout the Western world, who have not taken this issue sufficiently seriously. And I'm very grateful to my honourable friends for bringing this debate to Parliament today. Like many others, I follow what Open Doors says, and we know from their report that there are some 245 million Christians at risk of high, very high, or extreme persecution, and that is a figure that is rising. Only a few years ago, it was at the 200 million level, so it's getting worse. We know in China that over 1,000 Christians have been detained without trial or unfairly arrested, and also that in China, hundreds of thousands of Uyghur Muslims are also being interred, or families are being separated. In Nigeria, we know that 3,731 Christians were killed for their faith. We know the situation is getting worse in China. In the Open Doors World Watch list, China has risen from number 43 to number 27, a significant deterioration. And India, for the first time, has entered the top 10 countries of most concern. The figures for deaths and churches destroyed around the world are really serious. In 2016, it was over 4,000 deaths in Nigeria, with 198 churches destroyed. In the Central African Republic, 1,269 Christians killed, 131 churches destroyed. In Chad, 750 Christians killed, 10 churches destroyed. Democratic Republic of Congo, 467 Christians killed, 13 churches destroyed. In Kenya, 225 Christians lost their lives, and in Cameroon, 114 with 10 churches destroyed. So it's happening on a very widespread scale. And I think the quote of William Wilberforce speaking to this house in 1791, when he said, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never say you did not know," is as relevant now as it was then. Yes, of course I will.
To the honourable member in giving way, and he's put forward a real concerning picture from around the world, and in relation to addressing that challenge, would he agree with the words of the former Bishop of Rochester, Bishop Michael Nazir Ali, who said, "Greater use of our aid to persecuted Christian communities around the world is something which we should seriously consider," and gave the example of supporting the Iraqi Christian homes in the Nampa Plains, and a number of other lists. So the point on that is, as somebody who's a passionate supporter for international development aid, should that now be targeted to support persecuted Christian communities around the world?
Well, I strongly agree with the point my honourable friend has made, and I will illustrate the sort of thing that is going on by quoting the words of Bishop William Naga of Borno, who, talking about some of the refugee camps in Nigeria, said as follows: "When the care of the camps was handed over to other organisations, the discrimination started. They will give food to the refugees, but if you're Christian, they will not give you food. They will even openly tell you the relief is not for Christians. There is open discrimination." So it's really important that DFID, if it's involved in helping those refugees, makes sure that the British aid is going to everyone who needs it, regardless of their faith, and that sort of discrimination is not allowed to happen. And my honourable friend is absolutely right. We need to make sure that where overseas aid, trade and arms exports are concerned, they should be subject to requiring robust action on dealing with persecution. I will give way.
I'm very grateful. The Honourable Member is making a very powerful speech, and I, like him, pay tribute to the work of Whitney-based Open Doors for their powerful advocacy on this very great issue. He mentions Nigeria, and one of Open Doors' other points is that progress should be pursued in areas where there's already been progress made. Perhaps if the Foreign Office were to engage alongside the government of Nigeria, as they already have, then greater progress will continue to be made.
I think my honourable friend makes a powerful point, and I'm grateful to him for putting it on the record. Mr Deputy Speaker, this is a harrowing debate, and rightly so, because we need to bring these matters into the public domain, and we need to keep on doing so until things get better. But I want to end my speech by drawing the House's attention to some examples where one people group or one faith have come to the aid of another who are being persecuted. In the Second World War, when Jews were being rounded up into railway trucks for deportation, the Patriarch of Romania, in his full ecclesiastical dress, came down to the station and, quoting the words of Ruth in the Old Testament, said as follows: "Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." We need more of that type of intervention. So too in Pakistan, about which we've heard quite a lot today, a week after the Peshawar bomb, Muslims formed a human chain around some of the churches to protect Christian worshippers going to worship the following Sunday. In Oman, a Muslim country, it is possible as a Christian to worship openly in the Church of the Good Shepherd in Muscat, where indeed I have been able to worship myself. That is an example that other Muslim countries should follow. In Mandera, in Kenya, Muslims stood up for Christians who were being attacked by saying, "You kill all of us or you kill none of us." So while this is a grim debate, and rightly so, because these facts deserve much greater circulation and all of us want to see follow through from the government, I think it is important to look at how we can do this differently and look at signs of hope where people from one faith stand up against the persecution of people from another faith. And I want to end by thanking the Foreign Secretary for commissioning this report, this excellent report. He has taken a bold and important step in opening the government up to challenge. He did that for good reason, and we all look forward to the government following through on these recommendations, as it very much needs to do.
Dr. David Drew.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and can I start by following on from my dear friend over there to say a big thank you to the Foreign Office in this respect, and to the Bishop for conducting this investigation, but also for the honourable members who managed to get this debate this afternoon. Now, of all the excellent organisations that so far been name-checked, I will just give particular praise to Christian Solidarity Worldwide. I've made two visits abroad with them, firstly to Nigeria, where I took witness from the Bishop of Jos, whose own wife was raped by extremists, and he gave a graphic account of what it is like in northern Nigeria. Likewise, I made a visit to Pakistan, and I met there the inestimable Shahbaz Bhatti, who was the Minister for Minorities, who was slaughtered for his beliefs, and I hope in due course the Catholic Church will recognise what that wonderful man has done. Pakistan is an interesting country. It has people of all persuasions in their government, but Shahbaz always knew that he took the risk of losing his life, but he carried on nevertheless. I spend a lot of time obviously worrying about the Sudan at the particular time. It's obvious what is going on there, but I got very interested because of the religious divide. What I found when I knew more about the situation was that it isn't just Muslim against Christians. I think the Honourable Gentleman opposite earlier talked about Christians sometimes fighting Christians, which is sadly the case in southern Sudan, but also the way in which religion is used as a way, as a franchise, to allow people of extreme views to be able to go on and use those views to maintain power. So I would ask, obviously, the government to keep a very close eye on the Sudan, to make sure that the Christians who remain in the north, of which there are many millions, but we also try and bring some peace to the south. Now, just in the remaining 2 minutes, just to concentrate on a couple of points which I think are worthy of emphasis from the Bishop's report. When the first of those is, I think it's very important that our embassies and those who advocate on behalf of the British government are able to recognise the importance of freedom of religious belief, and they're properly trained and they go and look out for that. I think that's an important recommendation from the Bishop, and one that I hope that the Minister will take up. Often there are other issues connected to it, sexuality, gender and so on, and it's important that we tease away what may be a veneer of religion and look what exists below the surface. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is the mass exodus of Christians from so many places in the world. And that is unacceptable and something we as Christians have to do something about. We must make sure that we talk about it in this place. We must make sure that we represent those communities. And of course, it isn't just Christians alone. Often there are other groups like the Ahmadis, already been mentioned. I would mention the Baha'is, who clearly are a religious group very heavily discriminated against in many parts of the world. Just in conclusion, the one blemish and something I was sad about was that the bishop was called in by the Israeli ambassador to be admonished for the fact that he chose to mention Israel and Palestine as a reason why Christians have left the Middle East. I think it's important that we stand with the bishop and we make it clear that whatever the discrimination, those who may not be openly discriminatory are still nevertheless in a sort of covert way allowing these things to go on, and we would always stand with the bishop in what he says and what he's done and what we will follow up with.
Right Honourable Lady, Theresa Villiers.
Thank you, Mr Deputy Speaker. Just a few months ago, we stood shocked in this chamber in the aftermath of the appalling Easter Sunday attacks in Sri Lanka. And it's so sad to hear in this debate that that was just one of the most recent of a whole series of terrible atrocities committed against Christians in so many parts of the world. And I was struck by the quote from the Times that the Bishop of Truro put at the start of his report. Across the globe, in the Middle East, Asia and Africa, Christians are being bullied, arrested, jailed, expelled and executed. Christianity is by most calculations the most persecuted religion of modern times. Yet Western politicians until now have been reluctant to speak out in support of Christians in peril. I thought that was a very pithy summary of the terrible injustice we're reflecting on today. Christian persecution is a global phenomenon with multiple drivers, and it's so important to remember that Christianity is not just a religion of the West, it's a genuinely global faith, and the victims of the persecution we're talking about are in the main from some of the poorest and most deprived communities on earth. And Open Doors identified in a succession of World Watch lists the worrying phenomenon that Christians, where they're in a minority, are increasingly portrayed as somehow Western or alien, despite the fact that these communities date back hundreds of years in their home countries. And this is a particular problem in the Middle East. Christians have been living in the Middle East since the earliest days of the faith. They have an unbroken presence in the Middle East of 2,000 years, and yet they're under pressure in Egypt, in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen. And, of course, some horrific atrocities have been committed against them, including gender-based violence in that region. The situation is so severe that the very survival of Christianity as a living religion in the Middle East is now in doubt. A century ago, 20% of the population there were Christian. Now, according to this report, the figure has fallen to only 5%. It's distressing to read the Bishop of Truro's finding that some of Christianity's oldest and most enduring communities are facing what he called decimation. And there are tragic parallels, Mr. Deputy Speaker, with the situation of the Jewish community whose connection with that region goes back just as far and who were largely forced out. 800,000 were forced out in the years between 1948 and the 1970s. And my terrible fear is that history is repeating itself. And in responding to the Bishop of Truro's report, the Foreign Secretary acknowledged that the efforts made to tackle the problem of attacks on Christians around the world has not matched the scale of the injustice being perpetrated. And I welcome that frank acknowledgement by the Foreign Secretary. Well, I hope that the Bishop of Truro's report marks a turning point where that inadequacy begins to change. We cannot just stand by and let this continue to happen. Open Doors website quotes 1 Corinthians chapter 12 verse 26. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. We have a responsibility to act. And as the Bishop report says, the vague language of general condemnation must be replaced by action to address the specific problem of Christian persecution. A key task is to spread this message to governments around the world. And the Times editorial I quoted at the start said, we cannot be spectators at this carnage. This has been a powerful debate on a hard-hitting report, which I hope will change the direction of UK foreign policy in a profound way.
Lynn Brown.
I'm grateful, Mr Deputy Speaker. Boko Haram has been persecuting and killing Christians for over 10 years. In a decade, thousands have died. I'm going to focus on the story of just one woman. Sarah Tu's home was one of those targeted. She saved her family as her village burned, making sure they got away. They hid together in the forest, but she knew she would have to go back. They had nothing to eat, and she couldn't let her children die of hunger. She was spotted, chased, captured, and beaten. Sarah Tooze was taken to a holding camp with hundreds of other women, children, held like animals. She feared the worst. She'd heard the stories. Rape, torture, murder. Forced conversion, forced marriage, slavery. But her spirit wasn't broken. She was determined to get back to her children and save the other women with her. And two nights later, she escaped with over 20 women and children. 20,000 Nigerian Christians have been killed, and many more have endured kidnapping, forced conversions, and torture. The kidnappings haven't stopped. Christians across the middle belt of Nigeria still live in fear, and the violence has spread to the neighbouring Niger. Just last month, a woman was kidnapped by Boko Haram from the city of Difa, an area that has provided refuge for tens of thousands fleeing the attacks in Nigeria. They used a woman to send a message of terror, a letter saying to all in Difa, leave within 3 days or be killed. Many Christian families have fled in fear, but others simply can't afford to leave and remain at risk. It may yet become another story of religious cleansing and murder. The Difa region has already seen what Boko Haram will do. 14 people were killed and 37 kidnapped in two separate 2017 attacks. Soon afterwards, the daughter of the region's Christian pastor was taken as well. The persecution caused by Boko Haram is extreme. 8,000 children have been used as soldiers, targeted because of poverty and vulnerability, exploited, lied to, manipulated. Many are orphans. Some have been abandoned to the streets by parents who simply could no longer look after them. Mr. Deputy Speaker, according to UNICEF in 2018, 48 of those children were used as suicide bombers. 48 children dying in order to murder others. In that year, they were mostly girls. In 2017, it was 135. The campaign of religious violence hasn't stopped, and less than a month ago, 3 children were used as a weapon in a communal hall. 30 murdered, 40 injured. Religious differences have been exploited to create this violence. Christians, the minority in the north of Nigeria, have been made scapegoats, hatred created and fueled. President Buhari has made clear commitments to improve security, including for Christian communities in Nigeria, but frankly, these promises have been made before. I want to know what this government is going to do to work proactively with Nigeria, Niger and others to make that basic promise of security a reality.
Steve Double.
I'm very grateful, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and it is an honour to be able to take part in this very important debate and particularly to follow the Honourable Lady, and I'm sure none of us can be anything but moved by the accounts that we've heard. I want to pay tribute to the Bishop of Truro for his report, which I believe is excellent. The matter of the persecution of Christians has been raised many times in this house in the years that I've been here, but never before have we had such a comprehensive and well put together report that really presents the picture of what is taking place around the world. And I draw attention to the fact that in the report the Bishop included a quote from William Wilberforce from one of his first speeches in this house against the slave trade, when he said, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say, I did not know." And I think that's what this report does to this House, that never again can we say we don't know what is going on in our world today, and it is therefore down to us what we do with the information that we have been provided with. I want to pay tribute, along with other members, to the many organisations who work tirelessly to work to raise the issue of the persecution of Christians, and even put their own lives at risk to go and work for the protection of those who are persecuted for their faith, particularly two that I've had the pleasure of working with, Open Doors and Christian Solidarity Worldwide, for the amazing work that they do. Persecution of Christians is nothing new. Right from the very beginning, the Christian church faced persecution. But I'm sure if you spoke to those first early Christians and told them that more than 2,000 years later, actually the persecution of Christians for their faith would have got worse in our world today, they would have struggled to comprehend how that could possibly be the case. But that is the situation that we find ourselves in. And as other members have highlighted, that the vast majority, 80% of the persecution of people for their faith around the world goes on against Christians. And I believe that the persecutions of Christians can be a bellwether in the context of the broader persecution of other faiths. That often how a country behaves with regard to Christians in that country is a test of how other religious minorities will also be treated. And that's why I believe it's important that the Foreign Office, through this report from the Bishop of Truro, have chosen to focus on the persecution against Christians around the world. I believe it's often difficult for someone who doesn't have a faith to understand exactly what it is like to find that your right, your freedom to worship, to practice, to express your faith, be taken away from you, actually feels. That it is like your identity has been taken away. And it is, I believe, the ultimate violation of human rights to take the right of freedom of faith away from anyone. And in winding up, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I would just like to highlight and say that we must never take for granted the freedom that we have in this country. And as my honourable friend, the member for East Kilbride, highlighted, and she's not in her place now, but in her intervention earlier, I've been horrified at some of the abuse that members of this House have experienced over the last week or so, simply because of a matter of conscience, voting a particular way in a vote in this House. And we should all be absolutely clear that there is no place for that in this country. That people should be free in this House to vote the way that their conscience leads them to, and that is an ultimate freedom that we should defend and never lose sight of.
Jim Shalley.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Can I also thank the Backbench Committee for granting this important debate, and I'd also like to thank the honourable members for Croydon South, for Congleton, for Glasgow East, for joining me to present to the committee. The Minister and the Foreign Secretary for their commitment to this issue, because the Foreign Secretary has been much committed to this. And to the Right Reverend Prelate, the Bishop of Truro, for his efforts in carrying out the review of the SCO's work to support persecuted Christians. In the last year, Mr. Deputy Speaker, 100,000 Christians will be murdered because of their faith, 200 million will be persecuted because of their faith, and 2 billion live in what is referred to as an endangered neighbourhood. That's the magnitude of this issue and why it's so important to have it before this House today. Very happy to be here.
I'm very grateful, Mr. Deputy Speaker, to my honourable friend for allowing me to intervene. And as he praises the commitment of others across this House, can I just pay tribute to the work, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that he does in the chairmanship of the APPD on freedom from persecution. He represents our party, our constituents, but I think all those of faith who believe we have more to do incredibly well. So thank you.
Most generous from my honourable friend and colleague for East Belfast. I've been working to raise the issue of persecution of Christians, the persecution of people of other faiths, and persecution of people with no faith.
Thank the member for giving way, and in doing so, I just want to raise a point. I have a sister who's a missionary in Africa, and I can only say that in Africa they encounter persecution on a daily basis and have had difficulties in the Congo. Some of what has been termed as persecution has been sometimes put forward as tribal violence, and that is not tribal violence. It is tribes rising against Christians, and that has been covered up by the world media. It is something that we need to highlight as well.
I thank my Lord friend for his intervention. Very clearly, the Honourable Lady for Belfast South referred to our job in this House is to raise awareness, and it is to raise awareness, but it's also to speak out to those who can't speak to themselves.
Would the Honourable Member give way? I thank the Honourable Member for giving way, and can I pay tribute as well, I'm sure my Honourable friend agrees with me, of the absolutely sterling work organisations like Open Doors do. I certainly know before I came to this place, even though I attended church throughout my entire life, I was completely unaware of the sheer scale of the persecution of Christians, and I do believe that this is something that is incredibly important for all of us. We are talking to each other, and I know most people in this chamber have read the report and know the scale of this, but there's still a huge amount of work to be done out there. So I think it's our duty as well, not only to speak in this House, but also to go out and speak to our constituents on our social media accounts, on the media, to make sure that everybody is aware of the plight facing many, many millions of people right across the world, of the Christian faith in particular, and that's the subject of today's proceedings, but also of other faiths, and the incredible work that the APPD does to try to raise awareness of
I thank my honourable friend for South Belfast for her intervention, for her very kind words. The APPD, I write to some, I have some 80 plus churches in my constituency, Mr. Deputy Speaker, who I write to and let them know. And this debate will go out to every one of those 80 churches of all faiths across my constituency whenever next week comes round and the girls get the work done in the office. As APPT noted in her public statement, the violations of Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights are something that all religious or belief communities face in some part in the world. Protecting the one group requires protecting all groups. I visited Pakistan just last year, a very, very poignant and emotional occasion to see how Christians are positioned in Pakistan, in relation to education qualifications, to job opportunities, to rights to worship, to the right to convert. And across all of the Middle East, we're well aware of the issues. In Syria, 1.5 million Christians have left their country. In Iraq, there's only 250,000 left. In Iran, there's less than 100,000. The Colombian peasants, farmers in Colombia, Christians again, persecuted, tortured, murdered by government forces and also by paramilitary groups as well. Libya, Nigeria, the Honourable Lady referred to Nigeria, and clearly in Nigeria, Boko Haram have murdered to a large degree. Sri Lanka, the Easter massacre is all very, very real in our lives. And in Eastern Ukraine, where Russia has influenced, Baptist pastors have went missing and churches have been destroyed. North Korea, you can't even mention the word Christian in North Korea and you're right away into jail and prison. And China, as Honourable Lady has referred to before, is another country where abuses are absolutely unbelievable. So this is because Forbes is a hugely important issue. Indeed, on the same day as the launch, the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation published their analysis as well, and we have that before us. I would strongly encourage this and any future UK government of any colour to take this issue very seriously. Has the Minister, and I asked a couple of questions as well to the Minister, he knows I'm fond of him, and I know he responds well to the questions that we always ask, and I look forward to his response. Has the Minister initiated any action under the Sanctions and Anti-Money Laundering Act 2018 against Ford violators such as the generals in Burma? Have you ever needed reminding, Mr. Deputy Speaker, of how much the Rohingyas in Burma have been butchered, have been violated, have been murdered, have been raped, have been abused, have been burnt alive, whose babies have been killed almost at birth? These generals need to be made accountable. So again, I look to the Minister to see what we can do in relation to that. And also in relation, Mr. Deputy Speaker, in relation to DFID and the MOD, what chances or what discussions has the Minister had with both of those departments to ensure that they can also be part of the changes that are needed? I commend the charities of Christian Solidarity Worldwide, Open Doors, Release International, Barnabas Trust, and the Aid to the Church in Need for all that they have done. And I conclude with this last point, Mr. Deputy Speaker, is to commend the Bishop of Truro for his efforts with this review. And will the Minister request that a select committee assess this review to determine lessons learned and to provide support and guidance for future reviewers? Similarly, recommendation 22 of the review states that in 3 years there should be a review to assess the government's progress in implementing the recommendations of their report. So might the government also consider requesting the Foreign Affairs Select Committee to carry out this review? Thank you.
Fiona Bruce.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Strangford has an enormous heart and speaks from it often, and I want to say how much I admire, respect and have affection for him in that respect. I welcome the final report of the Bishop of Truro. I thank him for it and I commend the depth of the research within it. I want to speak to some of the recommendations rather technically, but before I do, and only very briefly in comparison to what I would have liked to have said in this debate, but before I do, can I just affirm what colleagues have said, which is that when we talk about freedom of religion or belief, it is so important to protect these rights, because so often when they are encroached upon, this involves violation of other human rights, including the right to life, right to be free from torture, inhuman and degrading treatment or punishment, the right to freedom of assembly and association, freedom of expression, and many more. And this recognition must be clearly visible in the strategy of the FCO going forward, that the importance of protecting the rights of freedom of religion and belief is so important, because the violation of these is often the root cause of so many other human rights violations we see across the world, as we've heard today.
I'm most grateful to Giving Way, and I really give praise her for all the work that she has done, along with my honourable friend from Strangford and others in this House. Would she agree with me that most countries in this world have signed the UN Declaration on Human Rights? It is there. It is a commitment that they have made. They, and we, as the United Kingdom who have signed it, we all need to be held accountable. And the United Nations needs every year to hold to account all those nations who've signed that declaration and who are not living up to it.
Absolutely do. And I commend the recommendation in the report for the UK's better engagement with international human rights mechanisms. But I don't think actually that the recommendation that engaging with universal periodic review is actually going to help enough. A review that's conducted every 3 or 4 years is not enough to enable us to address some of the four related issues that we see. What we need to see is a solid review plan in place for a rolling oversight of the FCO's obligations, as the Honourable Member Stafford says, under the UDHR and the ICCPR, these international standards, so that we can monitor the situation of the affected communities that we're engaging with, tailor the FCO's response and oversee implementation. For that reason, I am somewhat sceptical about the introduction of a diplomatic code suggested in the recommendations, because actually we have these international standards and it's those against which we should be judged. Turning now to another recommendation, I do commend the recommendation for the UK to champion the call for other countries, and this goes back to what the Honourable Member Stafford was saying, for us each to have a special envoy position for Forb. Something I emphasised in my communications with the independent review, but can I just stress that we do need to strengthen the mandate of our own Prime Minister's special envoy on Forb to ensure that he has all the resources and powers he needs to be effective. And I'm not sure that at present that is the case. I see the good work Lord Armitt is doing, but time and again I see how stretched he is. And I do wonder also whether we need this to be a distinct role from a Foreign Office Minister, so that really so many of the recommendations in this review can be held to account independently. Yes, I will.
Grateful to my honourable friend for giving way. And she's right in echoing the call in the report for the United Kingdom to become a champion of freedom of religion or belief. But does she share my concern about the deterioration of tolerance towards Christians in this country? And I would point out again the example of the honourable member for East Kilbride, Strathaven and Les Mahago, who has been subject to the most intolerable feedback in relation to her vote of conscience of last week.
I'm very pleased to agree that we must call out criticism of those in this place and elsewhere who simply want the freedom to express their beliefs,
biblically based beliefs, and the Honourable Member is absolutely right. I, and I know many others in this place, have been the subject of some really unpleasant attacks, particularly on social media, during the past week, simply for speaking out in this place and voting on biblically based beliefs on, for example, abortion and marriage. I turn now to the issue of, referred to in the report, of genocide, and I do welcome the recommendation within the report that the government should introduce, and I quote, mechanisms to facilitate an immediate response to atrocity crimes, including genocide, through activities such as setting up early warning mechanisms to identify countries at risk of atrocities, developing support to help de-escalate tensions and resolve disputes. This is something I've spoken of many times in this chamber. I've raised questions about and have put forward the Genocide Determination Bill that would, I think, help deal with this. So whilst I do commend the Bishop of Truro for highlighting this, I think it's important that we do point out that actually the SDO at the moment does not have appropriate mechanisms to consider mass atrocities and to determine whether they amount to genocide. Whenever asked about genocide, the government's usual response is that such determination is not for politicians to make, but for the international judicial systems. Can I say that I think this needs to be reviewed? The SCO needs to review its long-standing policy of outsourcing the determination of genocide to the international judicial systems, which often don't exist. We need to introduce an FCO-based team focused on genocide and religious persecution to consider this situation and identify red flags and inform the FCO response. And we need to ensure that the FCO works closely with other departments, such as the Home Office and DFID, to ensure that we really are applying the principles within this report internationally and also at home. Can I turn now finally to the recommendation that I do welcome of improved religious literacy training? There's a full toolkit for this, but as Bishop Kuro has said, barely anyone applies it in their work in the FCO or takes doses. We need to improve this.
Ross Thompson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Speaker. I'd like to congratulate those members who helped secure today's debate on this very important matter. The persecution of Christians around the globe is felt by many, both within and out with the Church, and in my constituency, as well as further afield. Because leaving Christians overseas vulnerable to persecution would be a gross abdication of the global responsibilities this country has worked ceaselessly to uphold over many years. The very birthplace of Christianity is under threat. Christians in countries across the Middle East find themselves driven from their homes, imprisoned, tortured or killed on the basis of their faith that they hold or the text that they follow. Whether it's Daesh in Iraq and Syria, the continuing spectre of Boko Haram in Central Africa presents a very real existential challenge for the free practice of religion in these regions. The presence of Christianity in more parts of the world faces nothing short of a complete extinction while governments fail to provide a bulwark to the tide of attacks on Christianity. Christians in communities across the world under oppressive governments or who are the target of militant groups take little comfort from warm words. For a child left parentless after her family was executed for attending church, condemnation provides no salve. For a pastor standing in the ruins of his church, statements of support ring hollow. We can do more, and we must do more to help bring the persecution of Christians to an end. So I do welcome the recommendation of Bishop Truro's review, showing the clear steps that this government can take, and I am encouraged by the words of many colleagues that demonstrate the constructive spirit in which we all are willing to work in. The challenge that faces all of us in ending the discrimination and violence against Christians is a monumental one, but I must say that the Truro report does leave me optimistic for the future of religious freedoms. This review makes concise, achievable recommendations that draw on the talents of our unparalleled diplomatic networks. The Foreign and Commonwealth Office has immeasurable experience in helping some of the world's most vulnerable people when they need it most. And now is the time that we use this experience and influence to protect Christians who face the most unimaginable treatment for following their faith. And I congratulate the government on its unequivocal support that it gave to defending the rights of those Rohingya Muslims in Burma. Because this support demonstrated the impact and the reach that our country has when we lead international responses to protect those suffering from religious persecution. The systematic denial of freedom of religious belief is becoming entrenched by extreme nationalism and militant extremism in all corners of the world, and we cannot afford to hesitate. This government has shown it is able and willing to lead an international response that tackles these injustices. The responsibility now rests on this government to agree a strong collective response with freedom and tolerance at its heart. Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Speaker.
Stephen Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker, and can I congratulate my friend, the Member for Aberdeen South, on his speech. It is deeply humbling for me to follow the Honourable Member, my Honourable Friend, the Member for Congleton, and my friend, the Honourable Member for Stranraer. When I think of those two members in particular, I think of the line in Paul's Epistle to the Romans in the first chapter, 16th verse, which says, "I am not ashamed of the Gospel of Christ." And I also thought, in relation to the speech delivered by the Honourable Member for Stranraer, he embodied the famous saying of St. Francis of Assisi, "Preach the gospel at all times, when necessary, use words." Because the emotion of what he had to say was very, very powerful. And I'd like to thank my Right Honourable Friend, the Foreign Secretary, for commissioning this report. It's the measure of that particular member of this House that he felt the need to commission this report in the first place. And I'd also like to thank the Bishop of Truro for the work he undertook to highlight the scale of Christian persecution in the world. It is an excellent piece of work, the report, and I hope the conclusions and recommendations will be carefully studied and accepted and actioned. And I cannot truly convey, Mr. Deputy Speaker, the emotions that I felt while reading the Bishop of Truro's report. The scale of the persecution of Christians is truly shocking and horrific. No one should be persecuted because of how or who they worship. It is a fundamental part of many of the members of this House's spiritual DNA that every person should have the basic human right of freedom of thought, conscience and religion. And therefore I will just very quickly say I fully support the Bishop's recommendations that freedom of religion or belief become the underpinning of the operation of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. And unlike my Honourable Friend, I endorse the need for a diplomatic code. I think some of our diplomats need to have clear direction in relation to the response that's appropriate to the persecution of Christians, because I feel ashamed that so many Christians have been persecuted throughout the world and that we have done so little to stop it or even to speak out about it. It is right that we have spoken out to condemn the violent actions that have been taken against other minority groups, but it is wrong that at times we have been too restrained, too silent in our condemnation of the persecution of Christians. May I also say that I agree with the Bishop when he says that the Christian persecution is calling out Christian persecution is not imperialistic, nor is it a case of white privilege. It is, as he says, and was quoted by the Honourable Member for Truro, my friend, the Member for Truro, it is not about special pleading for Christians, he said, but making up a significant deficit, because Christian persecution accounts for 80% of all religious persecution in the world. And our country must act. We have a special responsibility, a moral responsibility, because of the privileged status we have in the world. And with our head of state being the head of a Christian church, to speak out to protect Christians around the world. Renewing our focus, as the Bishop says, on Christian persecution is actually a way of expressing our concern for all minorities who find themselves under pressure, and ignoring Christian persecution might well mean we've ignored other forms of repression as well. And with the seconds I have left, may I make a plea to the Minister that we will use our soft power in order to exercise as much influence as we can in the world in respect to speaking up for Christians. I think it's high time actually that we escalated the role of the Prime Minister's envoy in relation for freedom of religion or belief. We actually need to follow the American example and have a dedicated ambassador at large for international freedom of religion or belief with a formal structure of support, engaging with faith leaders at home and abroad, and articulating recommendations for cross-government action in this instance.
Linda. you very much, Mr Deputy Speaker. As others have done, I too wish to pay tribute to the Honourable Gentleman and Member for Croydon South, who opened today's discussion and quite eloquently set the scene for what I think has been an excellent debate, but as some of us predicted, would be squeezed due to time. Now, alongside the Honourable Members for Strangford and Congleton, I actually appeared before the Backbench Committee in support of this application, but both Members for Congleton and Strangford in particular have been serious champions for the persecuted church in this house, and I know that I speak on behalf of everybody in here when I thank them for their pursuance of this issue. Now, I've got the privilege of winding up today's debate on behalf of the Scottish National Party, which endorses this report and the recommendations made by the Bishop of Truro, and we are extend our grateful thanks to Philip and his team for doing so much work in such a short period of time. Now, obviously, it was great that the Foreign Secretary committed to this review being undertaken, but the relatively tight timescales for the report to be conducted and produced have raised some eyebrows in terms of timing, but we are where we are, and it's important that the next Foreign Secretary is as committed to this as the current office holder. Now, over the course of this afternoon, we've had no fewer than 15 contributions from the backbenches, from members from Croydon South, Clwyd South, Truro and Falmouth, Newport West, Burton, Argyll and Bute, South West Bedfordshire, Stroud, Chipping Barnet, West Ham, St Austell, Newquay, Strangford, Congleton, Aberdeen South and of course Stirling. Now, for my own part, I think one of the most powerful images that I've ever seen was from Egypt's Tahrir Square in 2011, and that scene of Christians forming a human shield around Muslims who are on their hands and knees praying is certainly one that will never leave me. And for me, that kind of solidarity and fellowship is the very essence of freedom of religion and belief. However, freedom of religion and belief is not just some romantic idea. It is enshrined in the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That is to say, everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship and observance. So this review is today warmly welcomed, and it's especially welcome that it has a specific focus on the persecution of Christians. Now, whether it's a subconscious post-colonial guilt or not, there is sometimes a feeling that the persecution of Christians is often ignored and given less attention, and that is alarming when you consider the sheer scale of the persecution for those of us who follow Jesus Christ. And we know that Christianity is the most persecuted religion in the world. Indeed, in 2016, the Pew Research Centre found that Christians were singled out and persecuted in 144 countries across the world, and that was up from 125 the previous year. And we know from the excellent work done by organisations like Open Doors that a quarter of a billion Christians in the top 50 countries for persecution still suffer intolerable levels of persecution and risk simply for following Jesus Christ. And others have already done a degree of justice in terms of going through the report's recommendations, which the Foreign Office absolutely should give serious consideration to. But in the course of my remarks, I want to focus on where we go now and how the British government interacts with other countries in the years to come. And at the moment, I'm particularly concerned about the persecution of Christians in Latin America and Southern Asia. Alarmingly, we saw India shoot up the World Watch list this year, entering the top 10 countries for persecuting Christians. Now, that's particularly worrying because the hostility towards Christians has grown enormously in just 5 years or so. And put simply, that persecution in India can be directly attributed to Prime Minister Modi's Hindu nationalist movement. India is the world's largest democracy, yet we are still hearing of prayer meetings being disrupted by Modi's thugs and Christians being beaten simply for gathering to study God's word and to pray. Now, moving on from India and over to Pakistan, we're reminded of those paying the price twice, firstly for being female and secondly for having the temerity of having a different faith. Now, in Pakistan, Christian women are particularly vulnerable to abduction, rape and forced marriage, and it's estimated that 700 girls are vulnerable to that every single year. I want to turn now to Latin America, which is of course in the Minister's briefing he's familiar with. And there are a number of factors at play in Latin America, and we know that the main drivers of persecution is a depressing cocktail of cartels, state authorities and rival human rights claims by indigenous groups. In Mexico, for example, murder is at a regular occurrence, with the Roman Catholic Multimedia Centre reporting the murder of 45 priests and one cardinal between 1990 and 2017. Even today, Mr. Deputy Speaker, Mexico is still considered one of the most dangerous places on earth to be a Catholic priest. But earlier in the year, I wrote to the Right Honourable Gentleman about the situation in Chile, and the Minister, in his usual courteous but robust style, disputed that this was a place of hostility for Christians. But we know in recent years that we've seen a coordinated campaign of arson attacks on churches, both Catholic and Protestant. So I would be grateful if, in summing up, the Minister could specifically reference Chile and the latest situation there. But the reason that I raise some of these countries and not the typical ones like Iraq and North Korea is because these are countries with whom we seek to have a good relationship in the context of global Britain. Indeed, the government actively wants to do post-Brexit trade deals with them. So I guess my main ask today is that human rights and freedom of religion and belief is not overlooked in some mad scramble to do a post-Brexit trade deal. Because as is the case with any negotiation, there are trade-offs. But turning a blind eye to the persecution of Christians cannot be one of them. And that brings me rather nicely to the final thing that I want to quote, which is the Bishop of Truro's last words in the report. Perhaps the most dystopian aspect of George Orwell's 1984 is the existence of the thought police and the possibility of prosecution for thought crime. The freedom to think for oneself and to choose to believe what one chooses to believe without fear of coercion is the most fundamental human right and is indeed the one on which so many others depend. Because if one is not free to think or believe, how can one order one's life in any other way one chooses? And yet everywhere in our world today we see this right questioned, compromised and threatened. It is a grave threat which must be resisted, both because it is an evil in itself and because it threatens so much else. It is on that basis of that conviction that these recommendations have been formulated. And those who find these recommendations unpalatable should simply ask themselves this question. What exactly would the consequences of an action be? And how grave does the situation have to be before we act?
Liz McInnes.
Thank you, Mr Deputy Speaker, and thank you also to the members for Croydon South, Congleton, Strangford and Glasgow East for securing this very important debate, and also to the Honourable Member for Glasgow East for his summing up. The Member for Strangford in particular has done some excellent work as the Chair of the APPG on freedom of religion and belief to highlight the persecution of Christians and indeed those of other faiths and none. And I commend him for his passion for the subject. And yes, sometimes it's also emotional, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. We've heard 15 excellent speeches from honourable members, and the representation here has been impressively cross-party and multi-faith. Genuine action on the persecution of Christians is long overdue. Many have been trying to draw the world's attention to the deeply worrying scale of Christian persecution for many, many years. And like other members, I was shocked to hear that 80% of religious persecution globally is against Christians. And clearly there is a serious problem here that needs urgent action from all governments. The report rightly highlights that persecution of one's religion or belief is not limited to Christians or indeed any one religious or non-religious group. And the unfortunate reality is that countries that do not respect religious freedom or the right indeed to no belief invariably do not respect other basic human rights. The persecution of Christians often goes hand in hand with the persecution of other religious groups and minorities. For example, we might look at India, where the rise of Hindu nationalism affects millions of Muslims, Sikhs and Christians. Or look at Pakistan, which is about 95% Muslim and 2% Christian, and has some of the harshest blasphemy laws in the world, including a mandatory death penalty for insulting the Prophet Muhammad. The case of Asia Bibi was particularly concerning. Whilst we are all relieved that Asia and her family have now settled in Canada, it was a real shame that our government could not confirm at the time that they would offer her asylum in the UK. I had numerous conversations at the time with the then Minister for Asia on the subject, and each time he urged caution in making the case too public. So now that the current minister is in a position to comment on Asia's case without jeopardising her move, can he clarify whether it is correct that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office vetoed the suggestion that she be allowed to move to the UK? I very much welcome the government's initiatives to put the persecution of Christians centre stage globally. However, human rights groups and others are concerned about the government maintaining the momentum on the persecution of Christians. In July 2018, the Prime Minister took the very welcome step of appointing Lloyd Ahmad as her special envoy on freedom of religion or belief. One way to alleviate the concerns of the human rights groups would be to make the special envoy a permanent role, with appropriate resources and an ability to work across departments, and I hope the Minister will be able to confirm today that the government will be doing this. The Bishop of Truro stated in his review that we must be prepared to consider imposing sanctions on perpetrators of serious human rights abuses against religious minorities, including Christians. This measure to hold nations to account over their human rights violations could be a very significant step and would be a real statement of intent to show that the government is committed to protecting religious minorities. Another potential measure is to include human rights clauses in future trade agreements. EU trade policy is increasingly incorporating human rights considerations into these matters. So can the Minister give an assurance today that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office's significant work on the persecution of Christians can be mainstreamed through the new trade agreements? The Bishop of Truro also recommended the government seek a Security Council resolution urging all governments in the Middle East and North Africa to protect Christians and other persecuted minorities and allow UN observers to monitor the necessary security measures. This would also be a very welcome step and one I hope that the Minister will comment on. But I would suggest that we need to go further. Rather than monitor situations, we need to actively pursue progress on the persecution of Christians. And this can start with countries where we have good relationships, such as Nigeria. The report notes the internecine violence between Muslim herdsmen and Christian farmers across Nigeria's Middle Belt. If the Foreign and Commonwealth Office were to work with the Nigerian government to prioritise engagement on freedom of religion and belief in this way, investing the necessary levels of resources, a real difference could be made over time. It is true that the conflict in Nigeria is not simply religious, but is driven also by climate change and by a rapidly growing population. It is clear that more needs to be done to promote reconciliation between these religious communities. And I hope that the Minister will clarify how the UK will work with other governments to support freedom of religion and belief. There are numerous options available to the government to show they are committed to protecting religious minorities, many of them made in the Bishop of Truro's excellent review. And I am sure that the whole House will look forward to hearing from the Minister which recommendations the government will be implementing and what specific action they will be taking in the light of this review.
Mr Deputy Speaker, I'm very grateful to my honourable friends, the Member for Croydon South and the Member for Congleton, and also the honourable members for Strangford and Glasgow East for securing this debate. My right honourable friend, the Minister for the Middle East and North Africa, would have liked very much to be here today to answer this debate, but he is currently engaged in a parallel debate, so the honour therefore falls to me. I have to say I'm really grateful for the contributions of all honourable members. This really has been a most dignified and passionate debate, and I'd like to pay particular tribute to the honourable member for Strangford. I've only got a day or two left as a minister, by choice, and I have to say, in my 3 years as a foreign minister, I have answered many, many Westminster Hall debates, and without exception, on any topic that involves human rights or religion or persecution or international justice, the honourable gentleman has been unfailingly in his place. I'm going to miss him, if not all Westminster Hall debates. And he attends, he and I can still turn up. Yes, thank you for the offer, I would say, Mr. Deputy Speaker. There are not many saints in this House, but the honourable member is about as close as you get to being one. Mr. Deputy Speaker, on Monday, the 8th of July, the Foreign Secretary welcomed the publication of the Bishop of Truro's independent review
into the persecution of Christians worldwide. And I would like now to set out in more detail the response of the Foreign and Commonwealth Office. The world is an increasingly challenging place for people of faith and, in some parts of the world, for those of no faith. In the past 2 years, appalling atrocities, as we've heard today, have been committed against the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Horrific shootings in two Christchurch mosques shocked us all. But there are so many other stories of suffering that gained far less news coverage. And the statistics tell us, as we've heard again today, that Christians suffer more persecution than any other religious group in the world. And yet we hear far less about this than one would expect. We're too reticent about discussing Christian persecution, and I think we must overcome this mindset. The evidence justifies a much louder voice. And as the Bishop of Truro states in the introduction to his review, the majority of Christians are found in the global south and amongst the global poor. And the review takes case studies from China, India, Nigeria, and Sri Lanka, where persecution stems from state oppression, terrorism, and ethnic or nationalist conflict. As perhaps the most truly global of religions, the persecution of Christians often indicates wider violations of the rights of all minority groups, and the report notes the large body of evidence for this. In some places, the persecution of Christians is closely linked with poverty and social exclusion, and elsewhere, it is compounded by discrimination against women. And increasingly the attention given to Christian persecution does not dull, indeed, it rather sharpens our focus on human rights for all.
I wonder if
you
would give
way
on that point.
Yes, I would.
Mr. Way. And the Foreign Office has taken the lead on this, but he will know that a number of honourable members have argued there needs to be a cross-government approach. Yeah. The very reasons he's just set out, this touches on so many areas. Can we have a strategy across the whole of government to address this alarming persecution?
I absolutely agree with my right honourable friend, and in fact he's really making the point for me that this is not just a Foreign Office thing, and indeed it's not just an envoy thing, it's an everything thing. So it means that all departments, all government policies have to bear this in mind. And in doing so, we should not be timid. We should be bold and ensure that the UK's response to Christian persecution is in proportion to the problem. And that now, as this report suggests, demands serious effort. Yes.
Does the Minister also agree that if we are to call this out internationally, we must also call out criticism of those in this country who feel inhibited, perhaps, because they can't speak out on issues as a result of their religious views? That is wrong.
We cannot, Mr. Deputy Speaker, have one set of standards for abroad, a different set of standards for our own domestic life. They all have to be consistent. And in that sense, my honourable friend is absolutely right. Because, Mr. Deputy Speaker, freedom of religion or belief is already a fundamental part of Foreign Office work in accordance with Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We have a team here in London dedicated to this agenda, and our overseas network promotes and supports freedom of religion on a daily basis. Now, over the past year, we've spoken out about the rights of the Baha'is in Yemen, Jehovah's Witnesses in Russia, the Rohingya in Myanmar, and religious minorities in the Middle East. However, belief is a sensitive issue where more can sometimes be achieved through quiet persuasion and discreet negotiation. Sensitive cases so often depend on strong diplomatic relationships. With this in mind, the Foreign and Commonwealth Office has been tackling religious persecution on three levels. First, we work with the United Nations and other global organisations to create international consensus to support freedom of religion or belief. Second, at a country level, ministers and officials raise individual cases with their hosts and lobby on behalf of the United Kingdom against practices and laws that discriminate on the basis of religion or belief. And third, the government, through the FCO, funds and supports projects that promote respect for all people of faith and for those of no faith. Now, the UK strongly argues for civilian and refugee protection, for humanitarian access, and for the improvement of the effectiveness and funding of the international response across the world. We support efforts to ensure Christians can return to their home in areas of Iraq liberated from Daesh, and we're leading global efforts to bring Daesh to justice for their crimes. And 2 years ago, the UN Security Council unanimously adopted the UK-drafted Daesh Accountability Resolution 2379, which called for the establishment of an investigative team to collect evidence of Daesh's crimes. And last year, as we've heard in this debate, the Prime Minister appointed my noble friend Lord Ahmad of Wimbledon as the first special envoy on freedom of religion or belief, and Lord Ahmad has worked tirelessly on this issue to offer our support to those who suffer. Now, good work is being done, but we must of course reflect on whether there is more we can do to protect Christians who are persecuted on the basis of their religion. Now, the report suggests that there is more to be done, and I'm pleased to announce, in answer to the Honourable Lady's question, that the government has decided to accept every recommendation in full.
Yeah.
Now, the following list of commitments is not exhaustive, but I hope it illustrates the scale of our ambition. First, we'll put freedom of religion or belief at the heart of FCO culture, policy and operations. We will publicly articulate our goals and give guidance to our diplomats on how to reflect these values. We already engage on freedom of religion or belief in a range of international forums, but we will strengthen our approach with an advocacy strategy. We will carefully examine whether adopting the label Christophobia would better inform FCO policies to address the problem. We will strengthen our data on freedom of religion or belief, and we already have the Magna Carta project that is investigating ways to improve that data. And we will work with the Department for International Development's Freedom of Religion or Belief programme to look at how better data can inform the development of international policy. We will respond immediately to any atrocity, including genocide, and we will continue our work to impose sanctions on the perpetrators of religious or faith-based persecution. We will encourage arm's-length bodies and partners such as the British Council to develop appropriate policies on freedom of religion or belief. And to promote religious literacy, which was mentioned by my honourable friend, all Foreign Office staff will undergo mandatory training where this is relevant to their job. We will create a clear reporting framework to formalise how we engage with minority and religious leaders on the ground, and we will use the recommendation to tailor responses to violations. We will ensure that human rights reporting mentions faith-based persecution wherever relevant. Madam Deputy Speaker, to improve coordination, we will also investigate whether new Whitehall structures could strengthen cross-government thinking. We will initiate regular themed discussions with civil society representatives and convene ministers across government to give a consistent international approach. At the United Nations, we will explore how best to deliver a new Security Council resolution urging all governments in the Middle East and North Africa to protect Christians and to allow UN observers to monitor the necessary security measures. My Right Honourable Friend, the Foreign Secretary, will follow up on the recommendation that this report should also inform the work of other public authorities through a future full Cabinet meeting. And finally, we recognise the importance of measuring the impact of our work, so a review will be commissioned after a suitable amount of time. Madam Deputy Speaker, we warmly recommend this review for helping to give the worldwide persecution of Christians the attention it demands. The review provides us with new evidence and raises concerns to which we must respond. I hope members here today will agree that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office is demonstrating its firm commitment to addressing the recommendations of the review and to improve freedom of religious expression around the world. And may I say, Madam Deputy Speaker, that I am more than happy that my final words in this House as a minister should be in support of such a worthy cause.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Speaker. This afternoon's debate, I think, has been a really excellent one. I'd like to pay tribute to all of the members who have contributed to it, but in particular to the members for Congleton and the member for Strangford for his emotional and powerful contribution earlier this afternoon. I strongly suspect that the Honourable Member for Rutland's final words in the chamber will not be those just spoken. I look forward to hearing his words for many, many years to come. I strongly welcome the response we've just heard. It is fantastic news to hear that the government is accepting all of the recommendations in the Bishop of Truro's report, and I'm delighted we heard that announced in the House this afternoon. It is so important that all of us in this House and in government take responsibility for protecting and promoting human rights around the world. Yeah. Just because atrocities are happening across the oceans and across the seas does not make them any less serious. We should never pass by on the other side. And I hope this afternoon's debate will provide a motivation to the government to redouble its efforts, not just in adopting the recommendations in the report, but going further and looking at the ways we can use aid and trade and other tools in the government's toolbox to protect the rights of religious minorities and particularly Christians around the world where persecution occurs. Madam Deputy Speaker, I think today's debate has been an excellent one. I hope action results, and I'd like to thank once again everybody here for participating in it.
Thank you. The question is, as on the order paper, as many as that opinion say aye.
Aye.
The contrary, no, the ayes have it. The ayes have it.